LEX 18 presents a podcast with hot takes, hot topics, with your hosts, Megan Mannering and Evelyn Schultz. This is Hot Mike.
Everyone, and welcome into today's episode of Hot Mike. I'm Evelyn Schultz alongside Megan Mannering.
This is a special episode coming out on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yes.
And we have we say this every week. We have a really special guest.
We do have a special guest.
I've been deep diving into his history. I got a lot of questions.
Well, he's got a lot going on.
Pastor, musician.
Mm-hmm.
Author, podcaster, et cetera, et cetera. Mario Radford, welcome to Hot Mike.
I don't know if I should be excited or afraid. So thank you.
Don't be scared. Don't be scared. Yeah.
Well, we are excited to have you here. And thank you for making the time, because this is a busy time of year for you, right?
Yes. Yes. I think if there was the word busy, it'd be a capital B, capital U, capital S, and capital Y. All at one time.
I'm sure. Tell us what is going on right now. Now, this episode will come out on MLK Day, but in the weeks leading up, what's been happening?
Well, this is really the thing that we have every year of unity, and then we always have a tagline after it, whether mm-hmm. it's this year, our theme is embracing love, peace, and respect. And it's always interesting to me that when we have the theme, how deeply it resonates with what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, it's never just words, but it deeply resonates all the time. Like, if there was ever a time that we needed to embrace, you know, love and peace and respect, mm-hmm. it is really now, when there's so much divisiveness and so much vitriol and craziness going on. Like, it's a great time. So we're really, it has been a time of making sure that the breakfast is hot, you know, for people to eat, and making sure the sponsors are there and people are. So it's a great program that we've been able to come together. So for 32 years, we've been doing this. And I think that it's a testament to not just the event itself, but a reminder every year that at the top of the year, even on this particular day, that we need to be reminded that we need to be united, and things, instead of focusing on the things that divide us, come together on the things that unite us.
You mentioned unity. That's the theme, and how important that is more than ever today. What lessons from Dr. King resonate with you now more than ever?
Well, one of them, it talks about, if you're going to be a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper you can be, you know. And I believe that as a reminder that no matter what your task is, like, you don't have to be, you know, people often forget that when Dr. Martin Luther King was shot, he was in his 30s. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people are thinking that you have all this time mm-hmm. to make a difference, when whether you are in your teenage years or you're a sophomore or in college or whatever, like, whatever lane you're in, make a difference there. And I think that resonates now, especially for those people, some who in some sphere have been silenced. You know, mm-hmm. like, if someone silences you on their platform, build your own platform. Do whatever mm-hmm. you're going to do, because you resonate and someone needs to be reached with whatever it is you have.
Mm-hmm. I love it. If there was a message that you think, if Dr. King were still here today and he could talk to some of our country's leaders, some of our world leaders, what do you think he would tell them?
I think he would say, stop focusing on my dream and start to get some action, like, do some things. Like, we, and even in this particular time, like, focus on quoting of the dream instead of walking it out and living it out. And I know there are parts that have been lived out, but there's so much more, you know, like, even when he talked about, I have a dream that my children would join hands and hands with others, you know, mm-hmm. like, that wasn't just for picture purposes. Like, I think sometimes people think that even with unity and things that we can come together on, that they're just photo ops. Like, these are joining hand in hand in relationship with each mm-hmm. other. Like, we don't have to be the same to appreciate each other. Like, there's a difference in you. There's a way that you think that I might be able to be impacted by. I might need to learn and be like, all right, why do you think that way? Or why your upbringing was different than mine? You were from the suburbs. I'm from the city. I need to find out you're from the country. I'm from, you know, whatever. I need to understand. Or you're black, I'm white, you're Asian, you're Hispanic. You know, I need to understand that, instead of us constantly saying, you know, they're different or they're weird, you know, those type of mm-hmm, things, mm-hmm. The joining hand in hand is how can we find out what parts of us are alike mm-hmm. and then learn what the parts that are different, how I might be able to benefit from that.
Where does that start?
I think it starts, well, I am from the country. So I am from a place called Greenville, Kentucky when I was born. Mm-hmm. And we used to have, and I don't know how many houses have it anymore, but we used to often have a table discussion, mm-hmm. you know, where you would eat and you would talk. Mm-hmm. Now sometimes we eat and scroll, you know, on the phone.
That's a good point. We're all guilty of that,
but
yeah.
We used to eat and talk at the table. So those were the ideas and things were spread. And sometimes when you were inviting other people over, mm-hmm. or sometimes I remember like some friend would come over and be playing outside and they would say, you just come on and eat. And we would, they would ask, my parents would be asking their parent, mm-hmm. now what's going on with you? Now where do you live? Mm-hmm. You know, and you would get to know. So I think social media, as great as it is, has sometimes, and even with the book, The Anxious Generation, has caused us to stop asking questions or engaging in real, because now with social media, you can have a conversation with someone who's 100 miles away mm-hmm. and be texting or calling mm-hmm. all day long, laughing and smiling. Mm-hmm. And then when you get beside them, you'd be like,
we're having our scroll time.
Yeah. So I think that those type of things help us with differences or mm-hmm. understanding each other, like relationship or all those types of things. They come through interaction and through conversation and getting to know each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One amazing way to connect is through music.
Isn't it? It's the greatest
way. Yes. And Mario, as I said, I was looking at some of your YouTube videos. You have an incredible voice and you're conducting, directing. I mean, like you throw your whole body into music. It is so cool. We're going to insert a little clip into this podcast.
Just the other day, I found a friend. Somebody who loves me, somebody who cares. Oh, he walks with me and he talks with me. What a friend I've got.
I want to know, do you remember maybe the first time that you really noticed, like, I like music, or maybe one of the first artists that you recognized? Like, what was it like as a kid recognizing the role that music plays?
Well, my great-grandfather was a pianist. So I remember him playing. They said he used to play like at a juke joint or something like that. I guess I'm probably wrong, but something like that. Mm-hmm. And then he got saved and went to church and started playing. So he always had that real bluesy type of sound when he played. And I remember he only played with like one finger in his left hand. I didn't know until I got older that he had had a stroke. So that's why when I was young, they said, the story is told, that as all children do, be playing on the mm-hmm. piano, you hear it. And they said that every once in a while, I would hit these right notes. And my grandfather would say to my mom, he's going to play. And she said, I didn't play.
Yeah.
You know, which was his granddaughter. He said, your son didn't play. And mm-hmm. you think he's going to play? He said, yeah, he hits the right note. And eventually I did. And I started playing. And I would mimic what he did. So I would play with one finger until I got piano lessons. They said, do you know why he plays with one finger? I said, no. They said, because he had a stroke. He can't. They said, but you can. So I was mimicking what I saw before I even knew it was having an impact on me. But I realized then the power of music, influence. When I was growing up, I didn't direct a choir, as you referred to my throwing myself.
Okay, then what was going on?
I did not direct until I was maybe 16.
Okay.
16.
Did it come naturally to you?
I saw it in this might sound crazy. I saw myself doing it before I ever did it.
Like, really?
I envisioned myself doing it before. And I remember going to my dad, who's still a pastor in Nicholasville, and I told him that I wanted to direct a choir. And he was like, can you direct? I was like, I don't know. But I think he said, all right. So he let me, and I did. And the church was packed. I don't know if they were packed. It was packed because they believed in me or packed because they thought it was going to be the greatest entertainment they'd ever saw. I don't know. Either way, I did direct, and I've been directing ever since and writing music and stuff. And It's a great joy. I don't, the whole body thing, I think music has a way of overtaking you, where you just don't. I mean, music is the only thing, I believe, that can invade your space without your permission. Before you know it, music never asks you, can I teach you this song? Like, you'll just be in a store and you'll get in your car and you'll be humming the song that was going over the store. And you don't even realize that you were learning the song.
Yeah.
I've never thought about that before. That's an interesting point. And then for you also as a pastor, music is a form of worship. Is that obviously fair to say?
Yes, I believe it is. I believe that every pastor should be a worshiper now, whether that's through music or however, but that's my opinion. Only because, I mean, I think of the scripture that even when like Moses and Moses was at the top of a mountain and they were fighting, and it says that every time Moses' hands were up, they won. But every time his hands were down, they didn't. And one of the forms of worship is lifted hands. And so people recognized that he needed his hands up. So two people came by and they put a rock there to make sure that his hands stayed up. So I believe that as leaders, whether it be worshipers or pastors or whatever, our hands being up, it's a form not just of surrender, but also acknowledgement that there's something greater than me. And I think that that is, whether that be music or just acknowledgement, I think that that's a great posture.
Love that. Do you still play the piano or do you sing more? Or?
So I do some of all, but I don't do as much playing as I used to. I did recently, the choir at the church sang something and I dusted it off a little bit to help assist them. but it's been, I don't get to play as much as I used to, but I am starting to. I miss it. I miss a lot of it because it is very therapeutic because I can. I mean, as a child, I would play and be playing for hours and my parents say, all right, okay, that's enough, you know, so I do enjoy.
You were getting your practice in.
Yes.
Definitely. Who are your musical influences?
When I was younger, I thought I was going to be another Kurt Franklin. I really did. Like, I was really, I thought that was going to be my life. It was going to be Mario J. Radford and the family. I don't know.
Mario J. Radford and the family. Yeah. I like that.
I can see it.
No, but I did. I thought it was going to be that because I was influenced by a lot of his excitement. He wore like bright colors. That was back in the early 90s. Bright colors and, you know, just different things. I really enjoyed that. And then Richard Smallwood. I loved his classical interpretations of gospel music. Like, it wasn't just singing. It was excellent music. So it was a way music that you had to really practice. You had to really sing it a certain way or you would say, don't do that at all. so those were the really, I think, the two major influences that I can recall that I really was impressed by or inspired by.
We share a love of worship music, and my mom is a pianist at a Methodist church in Indiana.
Good.
So you better believe every time I'm home for a holiday, I'm open up the bulletin. What do you know? Oh, there's my name singing special. Well, this is news to me,
do
Mom.
Do you have to practice before?
Well,
do you know the songs typically?
We end up singing a lot of the same stuff. Okay. I've been doing it since I was young. So
do they still sing the hymn book?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What's your take on singing like all six verses of a hymn? As
that's a hot take, it could be.
Do we have to sing all six?
So we don't sing any in our church at all. But no, I don't think we have to sing all six. That's my opinion. Because I remember even growing up, some churches would do like maybe the first and the fourth verse or the first, second and the fifth verse or whatever and not do all of them. But then every once in a while, there was this guy. There's at my dad's church, and he would sing the song called There's a Fountain. And it talks about there's a fountain filled with blood drawn from Emmanuel's vein. I think it's like five verses of it. And he would sing all five verses. And like, it's a very long drawn out song, very, very biblically sound, but just long. And it wasn't with a beat, like it was very,
I think anyone who's ever been to church can appreciate.
Yes, and I would oftentimes get in trouble for not paying attention. Sliding notes to each other, just like, how much longer to this song?
Oh, yeah.
You know, older now, I appreciate the lyrics of it.
Yeah.
Just not the length of it. I still don't appreciate the length of it at all. The essence of it.
Yes, definitely. What was it like growing up in a church with your dad as the pastor?
Well, I will say I don't have a lot of the war stories that some people have as a pastor's child. Some people, you know, are like, you know, this is where I got my first wounds, you know, different things. I don't have those stories. I am grateful for parents that did allow me to express myself musically and stuff, because I wasn't, you know, I didn't play basketball. I wasn't in sports. Well, I did play basketball, but they would put me in like at the last quarter, like, right before last period. I mean, see,
that actually was, might be a good thing. You can close it out for the team.
It was like 30 seconds left. But the game had been called. Okay. Everybody was already getting their water bottle and heading out. It was like, good job. No.
You're the only one headed on the court. And
no, not at all. So I don't have those stories, but I was able to express myself as it relates to music. It was difficult in some regard because I oftentimes wanted to be like everybody else, but I, you know, I was different as far as music, gifted, and those different areas. And sometimes people don't think about, like, people who have a certain unique giftedness think that we just walk around singing all the time, that we're always, you know, whatever. and a lot of times we're trying to turn off that in our head, like turn it off. And sometimes people are like, when they see you, like, sing me a song. I'm like,
we know, were like, actually going to ask you to sing.
I mean, that's fine.
That's fine. We're going to get out the hymnal and pick something with a bunch of verses.
That's fine to do. But I'm saying, as a child, it's sometimes, or a teenager or whatever, going through puberty and all those different things, it can be difficult because while everybody's playing, you know, at that time, you know, Wii and Nintendo and stuff like that, I'm thinking of the next song. I'm catching at rehearsal. So there was sometimes those moments where I felt in my figuring out things in my own head, in my own space, because I didn't identify with on a basketball team or track or any of those type of things. So that was different. But as far as being a preacher's child, I have two sisters as well. It was interesting. We got voluntold for a lot of things. You know, we didn't get the option of, you know, signing up for things. We were told we were going to do that. So those types of things were interesting. Like, I remember a time someone nominated me to be something. I don't remember what the role was. And I remember saying, I decline. And I remember one of my parents saying, he doesn't have that right. He'll gladly do that. And I was like, so that was always, it kind of came with the territory.
A little extra responsibility.
Yeah. Sure.
At what point did you think, or did you know that you also wanted to go into preaching?
The word wanted is a really
strong word there.
It's a word that I would never attach to. Wanting, no.
Called, is that?
Called, the, more like it, but wanting, no. You know, I hear stories of sometimes I read books of people who are like, yeah, ever since I was a child, I just knew I was going to. I always knew I was going to be Kirk Franklin's, you know, his friend. Like, we were going to be, you know, I didn't think on that level, but I just thought that that was going to be the path. I was going to be doing music, be all over the world doing different things, saw myself directing choirs and things. The ministry part, you know, that was ministry. I was like, that was going to be it. But as far as the pastoring and people, I didn't like people like that. Like, I mean, I liked people, but I didn't want to pastor people. Like, and then put yourself in that type of role where sometimes the title of pastor is like this Marvel comic, Avenger, superhero type of image that you have these superpowers. You know, you are just perfect. And, you know, you live in this fishbowl of sorts. And that was something I was not interested in. So I fought that for a very long time because I was just like, anything but that. I'll serve on the parking lot. I will help with the, well, I won't help with the children. I didn't like children like that either. But I mean, I had a small list of things that I would rather do. But when I realized that it was time to do that, I felt like the best example I could be was a human example and not a superhero. You know, so I really tried, because I did grow up in a time where pastors and stuff were revered. You know, so, which is why a lot of times the word reverend comes from that reverence, you know, thing. And people would kind of put you, you know, like the pastor ate first, you know, nobody could pray for the food like the pastor, you know, like, can you pray for the food? I'm like, all of y'all, you know, we went to the same church. The one who cooked it, I think they would really pray for it. That chicken looks good. You know, so I really have tried to present more of a, I believe Jesus' model was he was among the people. He was not I remember one particular time where people say, "Are you the Christ?" Well, he said, "I am who you say I am."
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I'm not walking around mm-hmm. calling myself that, because those terms, you know, and even though he knew who he was, but mm-hmm. he never paraded that. So I oftentimes, and people sometimes are surprised, especially even when I do student teaching and stuff, I never introduce myself as pastor or anything.
Really?
And that's not a, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not, but it's more of, I would rather know you as who you are,
mm-hmm.
and then you find out later on what I do, because what I do when I'm called to do is not all that who I mm-hmm. all of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm many different things,
yeah.
you know. That was once I realized that when God called me, I answered it to do that. That He also wanted to use me, my mm-hmm. personality, and not mm-hmm. I didn't have to morph into something else.
It's funny you bring up just like holding the pastor up on a pedestal, because I remember I went on a mission trip in high school. I was a high schooler, but there were adults on the trip, and one of the pastors from my church went, and I remember saying to my mom, like, I can't believe he's funny and like laughs at normal people yeah. things and kind of makes funny jokes. I never in my life had I thought
yeah.
that a pastor had like, that sounds so bad, but like a sense of humor, and was really just like
the ones that we grew up with, well, I did particularly, mm-hmm. were very stoic
mm-hmm.
and very like, they were like figures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when they walked in, you know, yeah. they came to your school system, everybody, yeah. would, you know, so it wasn't, you didn't hear oftentimes of them saying, you know, I was watching Harry Potter the other day. You know, or I was, you know, the other day, I was, you know, you don't hear,
yeah.
I went to go see. You know, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Like, you did? You didn't go see Billy Graham? What?
Yeah.
Like,
but that has to help you connect with your congregants, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I've learned more, and some people, you know, oftentimes, you know, it comes with the territory. A lot of people are like, you know, thank you for teaching me. And I say, no, you've taught me much more than I will ever mm-hmm. teach you, because I have learned how to connect mm-hmm. through every story, mm-hmm. through sitting with people, being in different settings. And it's helped me to, this version of me is not the version that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. just not me, but I'm saying even this version of church. I know hard pews and mm-hmm. hymn books and, mm-hmm. you know, stained glass windows and, you know, stains in the ceiling. You know, all those type of things. Uh-huh. You know, I grew up with that. So to now be in more of a modern context,
mm-hmm.
had I not had such relationships with a lot of the people, mm-hmm. I wouldn't know how to adjust. You know, I grew up with, you had to wear suits and ties mm-hmm. and all that type of stuff. Like, oftentimes, if I came in there with a suit, I do sometimes, but if I did every Sunday, they'd be like, who? Where are you going?
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
My parents are still like, if I wore pants or jeans mm-hmm. to church, they'd be giving me the side eye, like, what's going on there? Mm-hmm. But it's silly because, you know, church is for everyone, and it come as you are. And I think that idea is a little archaic, you know, if you got to be dressed up and wearing your suit. I guess the sentiment, though, was you present your best to God. Is that kind of where that came
I
from?
I think a lot of it was. And then for some senses, I mean, also times have changed, because a lot of people used to dress up to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So the culture was like, people had a certain image when they went, you know, they wore, you know, not just sports coats. They would wear whole mm-hmm. suits and dresses and all these types of things, the hosiery and all these things just
mm-hmm.
to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that cultural shift that now, you know, if you dress up to go to work, sometimes you're like the only one. They were like, are you having an interview today? You know, like, it's a little.
Yeah. Who are you trying to impress here at the office?
It's very different. You know, I still remember the day that President Obama wore a tan suit, and it was like a topic. Like,
I remember that.
It's like, why did you do that? Like, what, tan suit? Like, the office of the president? And we've seen many things since then, mm-hmm. you know, but that was a big thing, because like there's certain protocol that was set. Mm-hmm. So I believe there was a time as it relates to church, and I don't get me wrong, I still like to dress up. I do mm-hmm. like to, but I also realize it's not required.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think at the time there was more of like, you have to do this, you have to do that. And mm-hmm. that's, I think that's also where the reverence mm-hmm. for pastors and different things came from as well, because mm-hmm. everyone felt like there was a certain tightening up you had to have, mm-hmm. you had to be a certain way. So, and then some people repelled and didn't come because they felt like, I feel like if I'm not perfect, I don't come, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And now, you know, we're not trying to relax that standard, but to say that God can meet you wherever you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything that needs to be changed, God will lead you through that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not here to, you know, we're not equipped to walk you through everything, but we can encourage you through all of it.
Mm-hmm. This whole conversation reminds me of your motto on your website, which is more than a preacher.
Yeah, I've been digging for real.
Oh, yes. We're journalists.
Yeah.
This is hot mic.
So what is more than a preacher, and what does that mean? You've already spoken a little bit about kind of your personal, your values, but what does that motto mean to you?
So the motto came, I actually had some people that would help me through some branding at that time. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my social media sites were very like church heavy type of thing. Like I was maybe mm-hmm. posting different things from our sermons mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. different things that were happening. And I had someone on the branding who was doing a consulting. They said, you know, you're more than just that. Mm-hmm. Like you write books, like you sing, you direct, like you're in, you know, all these different areas you speak, you know. And I was like, okay, well, what is you? It said, mm-hmm. if anyone were wanting to know about you, they would have to search, as you all do. They would have to search to find it because you're not putting it out mm-hmm. there. They said, are you ashamed of it or something? Like, you, mm-hmm. what do you want people to know? Mm-hmm. And I had to sit with that for a minute, and it then took me back to a moment that I had. Well, not just one moment, but I had a few moments in my life where I was told that I had to be only one thing. Like I couldn't, especially that was my main struggle as far mm-hmm. as even ministry, preaching ministry particularly, because I had been a musician, singer so long mm-hmm. that I was then told you can only be one. Like you don't, I mean, are you going to preach, like teach, or are you going to sing and all this mm-hmm. stuff? Mm-hmm. So I felt like it was a battle between who I am. So then I questioned for a long time, like, well, if I'm supposed to choose, then why did God make me like this? Like, why would I have all of these gifts and I'm only supposed to use one of them? Mm-hmm. Like, and so then I realized over time that some that had told me that were only telling me that from their lens, because they didn't have those others. Not that they were even, you know, not gifted, but they didn't have that one. Mm-hmm. They had never known how to cultivate someone who had many different things and how to use them all. You know, it's still you. So the more than a preacher came from, you might call me a preacher, but I'm more than just one label. It's more than a label, mm-hmm. particularly. Yeah. Like, you know, I can show up as an author. I can show up as a speaker. I can mm-hmm. show up as an interviewer of a podcast. You know, I can show up as, you uh-huh. know, any of those type of things, as a son, a brother, a friend, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm not limited to one. And it is also more of a conversation piece to encourage other people. Don't let anybody define you by one thing. You know, that there's more iterations of you. There's yeah. more different things. Like, you might not just have one dream in your life. That one dream can introduce you to your next dream and to whatever. So
we're all evolving constantly, right? Yeah. Is there a label that you haven't achieved yet that you want to add to that list?
Ooh,
of musician, preacher?
That is very good.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I've never thought of that question. Wow. That's really good. I would like to have like some properties and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I would like to do that. So I don't know if that's real estate or whatever, but I want anybody to hear that and be like, well, you just get a real estate license. I don't
want to add realtor necessarily to that list.
But no, that is a really good question. I've never really thought about that before. You did good. Well, you did very good.
Thank you.
Now I'll be thinking about that today because I just came up with that so we wouldn't stall too long.
Well, maybe you can report back.
Yeah. Let us know.
Well, it is hard. I think sometimes we, like you were saying, you have so many gifts, right? And a lot of people are gifted and you feel as if you have to pick one path in life. Mm. You do that when you go to college, right? You have to pick a degree and you got to get a job in that field. And it's like, there are a lot of other aspects that I want to explore. I feel that way at least.
I think what came to me initially is that all of the things that I have accomplished or been, mm-hmm. I never tried to be it. Mm. Like mm-hmm. I never tried to sing. Mm-hmm. I never tried to play. Never tried to direct, never mm-hmm. tried to write a book, I never mm-hmm. tried. Like, they have been all parts of me that evolved or appeared. Mm-hmm. Like, so I don't want to add anything to me that I just want to become that doesn't just evolve mm-hmm. from my natural self.
Yeah.
Because everything I can point back, like, I can sing on the spot, mm-hmm. I can play on the spot, I can write or whatever mm-hmm. those type of things because it all flows from me.
Yeah.
And that's been a different thing because, like, I never tried to be that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some people, like, they really want to be, like, I really, like, you know, whatever. And I'm like, you know, and I've worked on the things that I am.
Yeah.
But I never tried mm-hmm. to be it. I just was that.
You got to stay true to yourself. Mm-hmm. What comes naturally.
What's the name of your church? And am I correct? You started the church?
Yes. Didn't try to do that either.
This is a reoccurring theme in your life.
Yeah, it is. And which is very hard for sometimes people to keep up. They're like, what are you doing now? Or I get a lot of, what don't you do? You know, type of things. And some, I used to be honest, I used to be offended by those statements. Like when people used to say like, what do you not do? Like I've always, cause they would always be kind of met with a sound of sarcasm. Kind of should be like, kind of felt like I couldn't land on one thing. That's what it made me feel like. Are you trying to say I'm not, I'm a, you know, I do many things, but I'm a master of none of them, you know, type of thing. But then I had to realize, I'm like, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. You know, I have many different things that I'm sure people are just like, you know, but I've never tried. But as far as the church is concerned, yes, it's called Growth Point Church. So we started that as a Bible study. And that's all I wanted it to ever be was a Bible study. That was it. You know, some people say it was a template to start a church. I saw the signs. I said, well, I wish you would have told me. I did not see the signs. I was not trying to. One, because I wasn't that ambitious like that. I never had in my life where I wanted to be a pastor. That was not a goal. My reason we started the Bible study was more of there were people who were displaced and people who were kind of over church as it relates to feeling the dogma and feeling like they had to be a certain caliber before they were used or whatever. So it was more of a, let's just grow our lives. Let's just have grace for the stage that you're at type of thing. And it just grew from that and became a church. And now almost 11 years later, it'll be 11 in April.
That's awesome. You know,
so it is. Yeah.
You're running around from church and KSU and all these other things. I want to know, when you get a free moment, how do you decompress?
I binge.
You binge?
I binge.
What are you binging?
I just finished like Mayor of Kingstown. I really like Mayor of Kingstown. That's on Prime.
Yeah. I think my boyfriend's watching that.
It's very good. They're not renewing it.
I think my mom watched that.
Yeah, they're not renewing it.
Okay.
I watched Tulsa King.
Oh.
And it's very good. I'm watching something right now on Netflix called 61st Street or something. That's
okay.
With Courtney B. Vance. For some reason, it's very interesting to me. I don't understand this to the life of me. I did not grow up in a crime infested neighborhood. Yeah. I did not, I'm not exposed to a lot of those different things, but I am drawn to like those, you know, Alex Cross, you know, whatever those things, like anything that's killing and violence and murder and how do you get away with it? You know, those things, like, I'm just like,
you're trying to solve that.
I don't know why. I mean, I do like, you know, things like, what's that? That was something. It reminds me of Still Make No Use, but it's not that. It's something on Netflix.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about, but I can't.
Four Ladies. I mean, it's a really good show. God, what is that show? Ooh. I do love Bridgerton.
Oh,
really?
What?
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I mean, after all the murder and destruction, I just wasn't. No, that's what I'm saying. Bridgerton.
I told you, I am many things. I'm eclectic. I like many things.
Well-rounded.
So I will watch. You know, I mean, it's interesting because I can go from that. I mean, that's my natural draw to want to watch something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can easily go to a musical. I'll be watching. You know, whether that's Color Purple, the musical, or what's it? With Hugh Jackman in it. I can't think of it.
Les Mis?
It's always the
But he was in that too. But there's
Greatest Showman.
Greatest Showman.
That's the one. Yes.
Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
You know, those things too. Then I can go and watch Rio, or Zootopia. You know, so it's very.
Why did I love Zootopia too?
It's very,
a lot of people are talking about Zootopia.
I will say this. I do think my palate or my temperament are for anything that has a meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's crime or something like that, if there's some storyline in it, like I'm trying to figure out that. So like I'll cry on a Disney movie, like a Pixar, it's really things that resonate and have some type of meaning to it.
Finding Nemo, I still remember going to see as a kid with my parents. And I mean, I remember them laughing, but I also remember like people crying in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And when I used to live in Montana and I went to see Finding Nemo 2 alone on Thanksgiving. I think I was alone and I sobbed in that movie theater. So Pixar
that's a sad image.
not to make everyone sad here, but
Pixar
is really doing it.
I like Finding Dory too.
Not just crying.
Nothing's crying. But I mean, there are moments. Yeah, they'll get me every once in a while. They'll sneak up on me. I'm like, ooh, that was good. And sometimes I wonder, like movies like Inside Out 2. I'm like, did you write that for children or did you write that for adults?
Yes.
I'm wondering, because that was very deep.
That's a sign of a great movie.
Yes, yeah. I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually loved Inside Out. That was a good one.
Yeah, it helps people with all their emotions.
Yes.
And, you know, which one are you? Which character are you?
We always say in my family that my mom is sadness. not because she is a generally sad person, but she just kind of has, you know how that sadness has like a cute vibe in that? She like just her vibe, her blue glasses and stuff.
That's
my mom is like a blue blob, but
I get it.
Sorry, mom. I know you're going to listen. And
I didn't say it. She did.
Yeah. But it is relatable for all types of people to relate through. Do you ever preach about pop culture, modern media? Yeah. You incorporate
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah. I think, you know, to me, like even when the Bible, when Jesus was teaching things, it was based on things that they were familiar with, you know, whether it was strongly agricultural, you know, for that time, Middle Eastern, you know, they were talking about, you know, going by, you know, look at that fig, curse be that fig, you know, because it appears as if it's going to produce something, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, so don't appear to be something that you're not going to be, that you can't stand beside. That is called hypocrite, whatever. So even when he said, you know, you brood of vipers, you know, you hypocrites, you know, the word hypocrite really comes from a word called play actors. Like, they were familiar with plays and all those type of things. Like, you all are just playing games. Like, so I believe that he used a lot of different ways of reaching people with not just saying, you know, as we sometimes do, Matthew chapter 5, verse 3. You know, he was really using something that relates. Yeah. So I think whether it be movies or music or plays or Broadway musicals or whatever, or things that are happening in real time, like, there are ways to identify with it, you know. Well, yes, I use a lot of different things that are happening.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have a lot of material because there's a lot of craziness going on.
Lots of craziness. I try not to talk about the craziness as much as I try to use that to, if I am, it's more so like to resonate when we're like, whether it be healthcare or something, you know, and we're just looking at it as something that was all newsworthy versus looking at the people that you might be sitting beside, that their benefits are being questioned if they're going to be able to renew that, and then it makes it more personal. You know, so I'll use things that will resonate in that way. And then sometimes I'll use, you know, something that might have happened at the, you know, the Choice Awards or something. That somebody's mic got cut off or something like that. Like, or, you know, Beyonce, everybody look around on mute. You know, are you mute in your testimony? You know, or those types of things that resonate, especially because our church is primarily a large percentage, like maybe 76%, is like 40 and younger.
Oh, wow.
So I have to be very aware
of all the memes and the pop culture moments.
Like, I did
moments.
The whole clock it and the, you know.
Have you incorporated 6-7 into anything?
I did. And then they told me to stop. They said, that's enough. Yeah, I did. I did like maybe 3 weeks, you know. I've done a lot of things. They'll give me a window of time. You know.
Like, when it's no longer cool after.
Like, even like, you know, Vecna, Stranger Things, you know, stuff like that. You know, so you know, I find ways to.
Being at KSU, I'm sure the students kind of keep you up to speed
they
on that stuff.
They tell me things that I did not. I remember a student came to me the last semester. He had not, I won't call him out, but he had not done his work the entire semester.
Okay.
He came to me the last day of class and asked, could I give him an opportunity to submit all the assignments?
All of them. Wow.
By 12 that night. And I looked at him. He said, Mr. Mario, I'm cooked, ain't I? And I said, I don't know what that means, but I'm sure you are. Because I'm not giving you that opportunity.
Yeah.
So I had to ask somebody, what does it mean to be cooked? They said, it means he's done. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, he was. He was cooked. So.
And that's an example of your students teaching you something,
so
right?
So they do. So I do. I'm very, because I do. I want to, because I remember, I'm going to say my parents maybe a little bit, but I remember older people oftentimes saying, I don't know what the kids be saying. You know, they always say, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't want that. They have this language and stuff. And I was always the person to say, I want to know. Like, I really, I don't want to be that person who's saying a phrase that we said in the 80s. And it does not resonate now. I mean, every once in a while, I just slip out because I was born in the 80s.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, I do want to, that's going back to Martin Luther King. That's why I believe he was so effective. He was, you know, relatable to that particular mm-hmm. time. You know, so I believe that whatever time span we are living in, that we need to really know what's going on with that through ChatGPT or mm-hmm. whatever those different mm-hmm. things. Like, instead of saying, I don't know what, we're here. Mm-hmm. So we need to find out.
Embrace it. Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of, you know, these times, it's a challenging time for many Americans, right? Social issues, economic issues. What challenges do faith leaders face right now? When it comes to politics, all of that, what challenges are you all facing?
I think one of the main challenges, and I will say that there are some people who have a very good niche or edge at speaking a lot of the political mm-hmm. talking points and stuff. My focus has not ever been on trying to make sure I hit all the political points mm-hmm. Because we're not called to be politicians. But I do believe that we are called to speak to those areas and to challenge those areas mm-hmm. and to stand up for whatever injustices that they might mm-hmm. be. So I do believe that the challenge in this particular climate is being challenged for speaking about what you should be talking about or standing up for people who you should be standing mm-hmm. up for, as if that is a crime. Like, you should. Things, whether it be ICE or people that are not able to afford what was supposed to be affordable housing, you know, those, whatever those areas, or redlining or redistricting. It was so many different areas that are happening that it's like, if you speak on it, you know, like, they'll mute you or counsel you or something mm-hmm. like that, you know, and it comes from a lot of times the highest offices, you know, the land is just like, only talk on these certain things, you know, only make it look as if everything that's going on is great. The economy is soaring and is booming and all those different types of things. Let's talk on that. Let us not call out supremacists. Let us not call out things for what they are, because when you do that, then you are marked as dangerous or whatever, or you'll be called a terror, you know, all these types of things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there used to be a time that a bully was really a bully. Like, there was no other name for it. Like, you know, racism was racism, whatever. Mm-hmm. Whether you felt uncomfortable about it or not, that really is what it is or what's happening. And mm-hmm. if it's things that are unfolding in front of us, it is, I won't say scary, but it can be nerve-wracking in the sense of looking at the children now that are watching these things. Like, these things are, you know, like, still to this day, as many shootings that we've had in the school systems mm-hmm. and it still has to be a law passed. Like, it's like we have this day of mourning, the flag mm-hmm. is half mast, you know, we're, you know, let's have a moment of silence. Our thoughts and wishes are with you, and we go on until the next one, you know? So it's the challenges, I think, are like, it doesn't stop. And how do you speak to it without staying on it all the time? Mm-hmm. It's just like, we are called to provide a message of hope, encouragement, mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. you know, and point people to Christ and to a better self. But at the same time, not ignoring the widow, not ignoring, you know, people are really high anxiety. People are really trying to figure out, am I safe or am I not? You know, those, because we have a diverse church. So, I mean, sometimes you don't see people and you wonder, did they get, you know, you don't know. So it's, doing two things at one time, or many things at one time, mm-hmm. which I think is a challenge, because we have to make sure people are being pointed to Jesus, as well as making sure people are being taken care of in justice. Mm. You know, all these different mm-hmm. things are happening at the same time. So it is a challenge because where some people would kind of like, oh, you know, that happened, for us, we're like, this is not just the news. These are people among mm-hmm. us. Like, somebody really is impacted by that. You might not know them, but we know them. Mm-hmm. So we're mm-hmm. trying to figure out, you know, a way, how do we help them? So that is the challenge.
You have to have hope, right? When times are so hard. I'm curious right now, Mario, what gives you hope?
Yeah, I have some really good questions. what gives me hope? There's a song that a guy by the name of Timothy Wright, he passed away years ago, but it's a gospel song. But it's a song that he wrote, and the line in it says that, and it's not grammatically correct, but the word is, trouble don't last always. And that is mm-hmm. what gives me hope all the time, mm-hmm. is that I think it's a scripture in Lamentations around 3. It talks about the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercy is renewed. His Steadfast love, Lord, never ceases. His mercy that never comes to an end. But they are new every morning. New every morning. Great is his faithfulness. And I think that that gives me hope that no matter what happens in the day, no matter what's going on, no matter how overwhelming the times might be, that it has an expiration. You know, just like, you know, going back to times when I was younger and you go in there, try to get the milk and they would say, look at the expiration date, you know, and cause you'd be trying to, you know, look at it, it expired last month and it was sitting, you know, in the back. And I think sometimes we forget that things don't last forever. It seems like it's forever because of how dark the day may be or how challenging the times are, but it doesn't last forever. You know, administrations change. You know, things shift, seasons change. It doesn't stay summer forever, even though I don't, I'm not a fan of the cold. I realize that it has expiration. Spring is near, you know, so yeah, those things give me hope.
I love that. As we're kind of wrapping up here on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, any final message you have to folks that are going to listen or see this? Any last words of wisdom?
I think that the message that resonates or should resonate with all of us is that at the end of our program every year, we always sing, and even some people have contested it and asked us to sing a new song. And I agree. However, the song that we do sing at the ending is We Shall Overcome Someday. We'll walk hand in hand someday. And I think that the challenge is to make someday today. Make someday tomorrow. Like, what is one area you can reach out in? Like, what is the coworker that you see every day that you go to the same coffee station to make coffee with that you haven't said, let's do lunch together or let's talk? What is the one someday you can make today? And I think that that's the challenge for all of us in this world. Like, let us not continue to stack our friendship with people that are all alike us, but let's try to see what is inviting somebody who's not like us in this room and see if it can expand our thinking, expand our conversations and show us some blind spots that we don't even know that we have so that we might be able to make someday today.
I love that.
Yeah. Really good lesson and a good challenge for people.
Yeah.
So we're starting out the year here. Yeah. Find someone who doesn't look like you and make some plans. I love that and see what you learn. Mario, thank you so much for stopping by with all of your hats and all of your talents. It was so nice to get to know you. I feel like I learned a lot.
Me too.
And man, you are someone to watch, a true leader in the community. We just really respect what you do. And man, a great guest on Hot Mic.
We might make you sing off camera.
We definitely will.
Either way, I'm fine. I appreciate you all so much for having me. I enjoy it. Y'all did some digging. Y'all did.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. That's why it's called Hot Mic. Y'all did good.
Thank you. We're going to clip that and use that in our commercials.
Ooh, so that would be good. We are making a new promo.
You just gave us a good sound bite.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Mario Radford, thank you so much. And to our listeners and our viewers, thank you so much for joining us on this week. Dang it. I look at the wrong camera every time.
We always look at the wrong camera.
And I said this was my New Year's resolution. I was going to look at the right camera.
Thank you
so much. We will see you next week on another episode of Hot Mic.
See you then.